paranormal perception is recorded, edited, produced, and distributed by 22 Creations Multimedia, LLC.
Who said paranormal has to be scary? Weird, yes. Unexplained? Absolutely. If you've been listening to this show for the past 8 years, you know why you're here. For those of you that are new and before you listen further, know that on this show, paranormal doesn't mean just ghosts and demons and things that go bump in the night. Those things are real, yes, but you know that already. Paranormal Perception is a show that explores the things that are real. But you either don't know it yet, or your mind can't accept it. This isn't a show for followers. We want listeners. Listeners who are ready to think freely. Listeners who are ready for a new perception. A paranormal perception.
What is real? How do you define real?
Welcome to Paranormal Perception, the final season. Here's your host, Henry San Miguel.
Hey everybody, happy new year and welcome to another season of Paranormal Perception. And before I get started on this episode, let me address the last year's season finale from a few weeks ago. And some of the messages that I received from some of you regarding that season finale, asking specifically, am I okay? Is there something? I'm fine. Nothing wrong. What I said in the finale are my experiences with the paranormal, well, mainly the public people in the paranormal. Not your experiences, not a, you know, investigative team. I wasn't very specific. I said in a generic way, but basically said the people that, quote unquote, represent the paranormal publicly. That's what I've had an issue with. But I want to say before I get started, I want all of you to know that my experience with the paranormal, what it's been the last few years, It's my experience. It doesn't mean you. It doesn't mean everybody. It doesn't mean that's what the paranormal is. If you've had a great experience with the same people I'm talking about, even though I didn't mention their names, if you've had a great experience with them or just with the paranormal in general, that's great. That's your experience. That has been my experience, which led to what I'm about to say in a little bit. Well, I mean, you heard it in the intro. This is the final season. No more. But, you know, I'm in the season finale. I mentioned the election, and that seemed to have set a lot of people off, which is exactly why I mentioned it. One of the themes during the campaign was, we're not going back, or we're turning the page. Like always, though, it wasn't really made clear on what exactly they're not going back to. Sure, there were some me made up boogeyman things that you're not going back to where you're turning the page on, but it wasn't something that all Americans could get behind, obviously, as you saw by the election results. So I'm going to try something new for the final season on Paranormal Perception. On this show, I'm going to go back to something that used to be so normal that nobody even noticed it. Diversity. Specifically, diversity of thought. I mean, look at the name of the show. Thanks to my friend and former co-host Darren Olash for coming up with the name. But as the seasons have gone on, I realize it's a perfect fit. On this show, there's no answers. I don't have answers, although some do have answers. But I don't give answers. I don't give paranormal dogmas, if you will. Just a new perception, a new way to think of things or look at paranormal topics. I had a long conversation with Erin Olash over the holiday break, and as I was catching her up on what I've been doing with the other show that I do, the Geek Speak Show, and also Paranormal Perception, she made me realize that Paranormal Perception had gone down a very different road than the one that we started 8 years ago when she and I began this show. I lost that direction in the last few years, for sure. That explains, I was thinking about this, that explains why I kept running into the same types of paranormal people that I mentioned in the season finale, which is why I feel this way. Now, for this final season of the show, You're going to hear what I've always found fascinating when it comes to the paranormal. Not ghosts, not demons, leprechauns, not cryptids. Although those do interest me and you will hear some episodes about that. But what really has always interested me, even when I was a kid, is the real world mysteries and unexplained happenings and events. Conspiracy theories, I guess some would call them today. Things like, yeah, like ghosts and, you know, Loch Ness monsters, stuff like that. But also mystery areas. There's a mystery spot back in Santa Cruz when I used to live in the San Francisco Bay Area. Things that are unexplained like that. The Bermuda Triangle. Why, for example, I'm in Southern California now. It's a little smoky out here again. Things like that. Why do those things continue to happen? I've been here, you know, I just had a birthday earlier this week. And as I get older, I look back. When I was a kid, there was no such thing in California as a fire season. Now we have a fire season. That's not. It's not natural. It's not Mother Nature. It's man-made. You know, Florida has hurricane season. That's the planet. That climate change, they blame it on over here. That ain't climate change. You know, things like that. You might think, yeah, it's political. Nah, really, it's not political. Remember, I've said since last year, I've started saying everything in life has a supernatural root. So including what you perceive as political, not really. That's what you're going to hear on this final season of Paranormal Perception. So you're going to find some are going to find it interesting. Others are probably already tuned out, but you're probably going to tune out because I'm not talking about ghosts or I saw a shadow or I caught a whisper saying no. You're not going to hear a lot of that, and if you don't want to listen, that's fine. You know, one great thing about American media, and I've been in it for almost four decades now, one great thing that I've always loved about it is, and one great thing about America, is you've always had a choice. And not just in what you want to listen to, but what you don't want to listen to. I remember a time when you watched or you listened to whatever show you liked. And if you didn't, you didn't watch it or listen to that show. And nobody cared. Hell, nobody knew if you were watching or not watching. And the best part, life went on. Everybody was happy. Nobody hated anybody or canceled anybody. So that's the kind of stuff that I want to go back to on this final season of Paranormal Perception. I think you're going to like it. I say, let's give it a try. So having said that, let's get it started in just a second with you'll see. It's going to be quite different than what you've heard on Paranormal Perception. I'll do that in about a minute.
Paranormal Perception will continue in a moment.
At Eerie Expeditions Magazine, we believe in the magic that lies beyond the ordinary, the mysteries that beckon from the shadows, and the stories whispered by the unseen. Our magazine is dedicated to exploring the intriguing and often spine-chilling world of paranormal travel. Whether you're a seasoned paranormal investigator or a curious traveler with a penchant for the supernatural, we have something to spark your curiosity and ignite your adventurous spirit. Our mission is to uncover the hidden corners of the world where the paranormal comes to life. We aim to provide our readers with immersive and authentic experiences, from haunted hotels and ghost towns to mystical landscapes and ancient sites steeped in legend. Through captivating storytelling, detailed guides, and exclusive interviews, we bring the eerie and extraordinary to your fingertips. Visit eerieexpeditionsmagazine.com to start your subscription today.
On this show, you'll hear discussions about ghosts, demons, and things that go bump in the night. But you'll also hear real-world issues, like what those demons make other humans do, why some things on this planet will never be explained, and if we really are alone or not in the universe. All universes. That's why this isn't the same old paranormal. This is Paranormal Perception.
Let's kick off the new season with Joel Skousen. Joel is a political scientist by training. He specializes in the philosophy of law and constitutional theory. He's also a designer of high-security residences and retreats. His latest book in that field is called Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places. Joel Skousen publishes a weekly email newsletter titled The World Affairs Brief, where his main area of focus is the hidden globalist agenda behind U.S. foreign and domestic policy. You can learn more about Joel, buy his books, and sign up for the newsletter at his website, joelskousen.com. I have it linked on the show description. Welcome to the show, Joel, and Happy New Year to you.
Well, thank you very much, Henry. Good to be with you.
Thanks for coming. So we can talk about, we can sit here for 2 hours. We've had so many things happen in just the first 2 weeks of 2025. But to start, let me actually go back to the final weeks of 2024. And it's a story from late last year that, as I expected, was going to disappear within a few weeks. And that was the mysterious drones that were flying all over American cities. Suddenly they disappeared. No one's talking about them. What happened to those? And were you following that story? And what do you think they were?
Yes, I covered that in two issues of the World Affairs Brief very extensively. It was my experience as a military pilot, and military pilots, especially Navy Marine Corps pilots like myself, have seen real UFOs, and they are not, physical of this earth. They don't follow Newtonian physics. They make right angle turns at extremely high speeds, much higher than, they can put out light. They can throw out laser beams. They can descend into the ocean and come back up again. There are no drones that can do this. So this is really, truly paranormal experience, and it's very real. Now, as to the larger question of, alien appearances to people, that's another subject and a large question. What I have determined from the drone controversy is that, and there were drones out there, but one of the big problems is that people are very inexperienced at being able to determine the difference between aircraft with navigation lights and drones with navigation lights and UFOs, very difficult to perceive at night, especially at distance. And so there were a lot of false reports, and they called everything drones, and they clearly weren't all drones. So it was a fairly complex situation. But the key thing is that no damage occurred. In other words, if this were a Chinese invasion of drones, there was no damage. There was very little to surveil at night, especially over like the Picatinny Arsenal, which everything is under roof. There's nothing you can see by drone. There was a major, incursion of drones, about 50 at a time with lights on them that came across the ocean from the Atlantic. And that could only have been a military exercise because enemy type drones wouldn't put navigation lights on them without any lights. And one of the things that people don't understand, one of the big controversies was, well, the government knows something, they're not telling us. Well, in reality, radar can't pick up most of these drones. Radar is fairly distant. Surveillance radar from the FAA and even military radar can't pick up a carbon fiber drone that's only, a few, even a meter in size. Car-sized drones, yes, but most of those were actually airplanes that people saw. It's just very difficult to tell at night what people are seeing. But that's how I covered the drone situation. And they have kind of gone away, so. But remember that a lot of what they were seeing were UFOs because they were defying the speed of light. When a light moves across the sky in a second and a half, that's faster than hypersonic speed. I covered the FAA transcripts of pilots in the Seattle district where they were all observing, several pilots at a time at airliners were observing lights moving quickly in the distance that turned out to be UFOs that couldn't be seen on FAA radar. But multiple pilots were seeing them and describing them. So there's real evidence that we're not alone in the universe.
Yeah, but my worry when we started getting the drone stories is similar to when we had the balloons flying over the country. I think it was a year or 2 years ago now. where that one seemed to be a little bit more strategic. It did fly over strategic areas, and it was during the day. And plus, you can see more as high as those balloons were. With this one, I honestly didn't. I'm glad you explained it that way. Wasn't really sure how to see these, because some may, like you said, may have been military, whether ours or somebody else's, the way they flew. Others, I figured they were drones. So, you know, and then they just disappeared. Now, the other thing that we have to deal with today when we get stories like this, unfortunately, is copycats. A lot of people own drones, and, you know, because we have social media and they want to go viral, they want people to follow them, they fly up their drones and start taking pictures. So that adds to the confusion and the is this real or not? So we have that also to deal with. So it's pretty tough, I would imagine, for someone like you who has to do this kind of research to deal with the clowns, I call them, who have to make their own videos for social media that add to all of this confusion.
Right, but all these hobbyist type, drones are too small to fit into what people are describing, and they're out there, and there are Chinese drones out there. I mean, Andrews Air Force Base was overflown by a swarm of drones that were taking pictures, and there's a lot to see. Mm. This was during the daytime too, so there clearly are Chinese drones, and I think all the thousands of Chinese military-age men that the Biden administration has allowed to cross the border are in fact not trying to invade the United States, but are probably trained in drone warfare and have bought up drones and are starting to surveil the United States in preparation for the war that is surely going to come between the U.S. and Russia and China.
Yeah, I've talked about that, and you know, people think I'm crazy. They look at me like, why are we talking about war? I think this, whatever war that is, there might be some shooting, but I think it's going to be more of a technological war, cyber war, if you will, than just the traditional war, I'll say. I mean, what do you think this war is going to look like?
Well, I've covered a lot of this in depth in the World Affairs Brief over the years. And there was a speech in 2013 by General Hao Qian of China. It was leaked to the Epoch Times, talking about how they were trying to develop chemical weapons to be able to discriminate between Asians and Caucasians, basically to cleanse the United States. You see, China can't feed its own people. They've run out of living space. They want North America and Canada to repopulate with Chinese. They don't want to hurt the infrastructure. They want to cleanse the land. But so far, they have not been able to develop chemical weapons that would discriminate between Asians and Chinese. And so they have reverted to their nuclear strategy, which is to build a formidable conventional and nuclear force that will take out or try to decapitate Western military forces and bases in a first strike and then try to blackmail the West into submission. As I say, they don't want to destroy the infrastructure upon which they rely upon for trade and technology, because they've stolen and bought and, you know, through their feigning capitalism, they bought and required that companies that do business in China turn over their technology to China. So they're very much intent. Remember, they're still a very deeply communist country. It's in their DNA to destroy the West, but they don't want to destroy the infrastructure. And so a nuclear preemptive strike on military targets is what they're currently planning with nuclear weapons. In combination with Russia, who has the largest complement of nuclear weapons and missiles by far, about 10 times larger than the U.S. force, which is now a puny 400 missiles, where we've taken off the three warheads and we now only have a single warhead on each one of those missiles. And I'm the only one who has documented as a journalist over the years the phony fall of the Soviet Union, how the Soviet Union actually faked their own demise and are still a communist country, and how they put the Russian-speaking people into the boundaries of Ukraine during Soviet years, knowing that they were going to fake their own demise. They wanted an excuse to get back into and reconstitute the Soviet Union after letting go of those states so that they could get aid and trade from the West. They also put hundreds of thousands of Russians into the Baltic states of Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania for the same purpose. And they were planning on taking them back after they had done Ukraine. So a lot of this is very difficult for Americans to understand because they don't, you know, the media won't talk about conspiracy theory or fact. And I'm probably the top national expert in the United States on the history of the deep state.
Yeah. Yeah. When the new president comes, when President Trump comes in, he's said many times during the campaign and now that he is president-elect, he has promised that there will be an end to the Ukraine conflict over there. Is it going to be that easy to just say, yes, okay, you got to end it now?
Well, he could by simply cutting off military aid to Ukraine, and that would end it. But he's getting some pretty good, significant briefings now, which may moderate that point of view. You see, Trump was never a conservative, frankly, became president. He's a populist who picked up easily on some very interesting points about making America great, which is fine. But you see, we're controlled by a deep state, which is the enforcement arm of the larger globalist conspiracy, wanting to get all Western nations into a militarized global government. And if I can just give a brief summary of the history of the deep state, they've always used wars to try to talk nations out of their sovereignty and into a global government. Started with World War I. That was clearly a provoked war with the assassination of the Archduke Ferdinand. Didn't have to go to war, but they used that as an excuse. That gave us the United Nations. That didn't pass the U.S. Senate, so that failed. World War II gave us the United Nations. I'm sorry, the League of Nations in World War I, League of Nations. And World War II gave us the United Nations, but it had no enforcement power, no military power, no taxing power, no regulatory power. So they need one more war. And the globalists have been building these two enemies, Russia and China, since their inception. Anthony Fauci wrote a book, Wall Street and the Rise of Bolshevism, how they funded the Bolshevik Revolution, which may seem rather queer to Americans. Why would capitalists be funding a communist revolution? Well, these capitalists were not just wealthy. They were globalists who were part of this globalist agenda of building a new world order. They also funded Hitler. Anthony Sutton wrote the book Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. Even during World War II with Lend-Lease, after the war ended, and I emphasize afterwards, when there was no excuse to be giving Lend-Lease to Russia, the U.S. gave Russia the rest of the nuclear plans to weapons that they couldn't steal in the Manhattan Project through Lend-Lease. Shipped them in three big suitcases that were broken open by the commander of the base, Major Racy Jordan. And he quickly got a call from the Truman White House. One of the communist infiltrators there told him, you know, give those plans back to the Russians and don't tell anyone about it. So there was a conspiracy to build this enemy. Even in World War II, we gave, in Lend-Lease, after World War II, we gave the Russians the first shipment of enriched uranium. They had the plans, but they didn't know how to enrich uranium, so the U.S. had to give them the first shipment. So we made Russia a nuclear power, our own enemy. We brought Mao Zedong to power in China. Globalist George Catlett Marshall cut off military aid to Chiang Kai-shek to bring Mao to power. We brought Castro to power in Cuba by cutting off military aid to Batista. And we brought the Sandinistas to power in Nicaragua by cutting off military aid to General Somoza there, the most Western-friendly, U.S.-trained military leader in America, all under Jimmy Carter, who just died. And we gave away the Panama Canal. I mean, this is just stupid. But these are globalists setting up the stage for future conflict where they can talk Americans into joining a militarized global government. And it's my theory that they'll do that by allowing a nuclear first strike on military targets to fall. They have spies within Russia and China. They know that they don't intend to hit cities in the first strike, only military targets, and blackmail the West into submission. And that allows our globes to come out of their bunkers and say, well, our military has been decapitated. The only way we can now prosecute World War III is to join in a militarized global government with our friends. And I think that's how it's going to play out. But believe me, Russia and China are preparing for this. The only reason that Russia doesn't attack using nuclear weapons in Ukraine or over the issue of Ukraine, as Putin has threatened a dozen times now, is because you can't nuke your enemy if you can't occupy. And he can't occupy all of Ukraine, let alone Eastern Europe or the United States. So he has to wait for China. And that's why probably the trigger event for World War III will be China's attack on Taiwan. And that's because North Korea has vowed that if we try to interfere with China, that they will attack U.S. troops in South Korea, Guam, and perhaps Hawaii. And that would bring World War III on.
Yeah. Yeah, I talk about it here with other guests also, and I mention it sometimes. Why is it, though? Why do you think, obviously, you have your readers, your followers, I have my listeners who understand this, but the average citizen, I'll say, they put their head in the sand or roll their eyes when we say things like this. They don't believe it. They don't. Why is it so difficult for people to believe that there is a deep state? They are pulling the strings, if you will. Why does the average citizen find it so hard to believe that something like this is actually happening in their lifetime?
Well, because the average person is busy. He's fighting inflation. He's trying to stay alive. He's trying to, and they're interested in their recreation and their television and their football. And so they are content to take what the mainstream media gives them. They are slaves to the mainstream media. And most people don't even watch the evening news. But of those that do, they tend to accept the evening news, even though the confidence level is low. People are skeptical. They have, if they don't deal assiduously in finding the truth in the alternative media, and there's some junk in the alternative media too, as you know, but if they don't take the effort that it takes to read a newsletter like mine, which comments on the news from the deep state perspective every week, or to really dig deep, they're not going to find the truth. Now, remember that most people don't even consider war to be an issue because the mainstream media isn't promoting it. And the government has a kind of a secret, unstated rule. You don't alert the American people. And they're preparing. Believe me, they've got a lot of new underground bunkers they're building because they know the Russians and the Chinese know where their existing bunkers are. And they're preparing to survive this war. But they're not warning the American people. And as I say, as long as the media is complicit in this and will not warn the American people, people are content to just be blind. And that's the problem.
The usual question I get from people, especially the doubters, is what can the average citizen, what can they do against these threats? Okay, so they know about the deep state and all the things that you just mentioned, but what can they do against all of that?
Well, they can't stop it, for one thing. Because we have no power as citizens except through our elected representatives. And the deep state has about dirt on about 75% of Congress so that they don't dare, even if they were willing to, which they're not. They control about 80% of the top level judges in the United States, including, we don't really have a conservative majority in the Supreme Court. John Roberts is... Deep state has a chain around his neck, as well as Brett Kavanaugh. Brett Kavanaugh, most conservatives don't realize, was number two to Ken Starr in the cover-up of the Vince Foster murder, which happened many years ago. The lawyer of Bill Clinton, who was going to blow the whistle on the Clintons' finances, and deep state killed him to protect the Clintons. So there really isn't anything that Americans do to overturn this. I think the deep state is already too powerful and strong. Trump only won this election despite all of the same type of election fraud machinery they had in 2020 because the RNC, and I covered this in the World Affairs Brief, the RNC paid 3,500 attorneys to staff all of the counting places of the swing states to make sure they didn't stop counting. And they had judges on speed dial to make sure that they could keep these election officials from stopping counting, because that's how they trucked in loads of illegal and fraudulent ballots in 2020 to skew the election for Biden. They stopped that. They had 230,000 poll watchers also present to watch over this. And that's why they couldn't, they just deal a lot through computer fraud and other things, but they couldn't make it enough to overwhelm the outpouring of expression against Biden and Harris to vote in Donald Trump.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, just looking at it from someone that doesn't do research the way you do, just look at 2020 and this year, the results. Biden supposedly 81 million, the most any candidate's ever had. Kamala Harris, who supposedly was the most popular ever, the votes didn't say that. So why is, if she was so more popular than Biden, we were led to believe, why wouldn't she get more votes? So sometimes the dots connect a little too easily, and I'm always surprised how people don't see that and can't connect the dots.
As I say, they work with the establishment. But in larger answer to your question of what can people do, they can prepare to survive this stuff. And that's, I've dedicated the other half of my career to the preparedness. That's why I wrote Strategic Relocation. You remember, if nuclear war is coming, which is going to be preceded by an EMP strike, Russians on the grid to cause the max amount of fear to open us up to their blackmail proposal, you know, it's going to be chaos. Within 3 days, all the food out of the stores will be stripped bare. Yeah. There won't be any water or sewer in the cities without electricity. There won't be any shipments of food from California coming in. And that grid isn't coming back up for at least a year, because we don't supply or build any of those long-distance transformers in America. They're all built in Germany or South Korea or China. And without transportation and a grid, we're not going to get any more in. So we got to be prepared for the long haul of civil unrest. And that's why I wrote Strategic Relocation, as people need to prepare to get out of the cities, because that's going to be a nightmare Mad Max scenario without electricity.
Yeah, let me get into the book, actually. You call it Northern California, Northern America's safe spaces, safe places. Without giving out the entire book, we do want them to go out and buy it. But what would you consider safe places in the event of a nuclear attack?
Well, first of all, you got to remember the number one, they're only going to attack military targets in the first strike. And I think the globalists have provisions to stop subsequent strikes. I won't get into that right now, but in any case, I think the big problem is population density. Without electricity, even if you aren't struck in the cities, there's going to be mass panic. And, you know, it's like Katrina, when everybody tried to get on the freeway and it was just gridlock on the freeway and you couldn't move, people had to abandon their cars. You're going to see that all over again when that happens in the big city. So population density is the big thing. You've got to get prepared to be out of the cities or get out of the cities at the first signs of war coming. And, you know, most people are in the big cities because of their jobs, but those jobs are not going to exist if there's no electricity. So there's no reason to plan on staying long term. I recommend that people recommend to get to rural areas to provide retreats from themselves or places within friends or family that live in rural areas. And then there's the problem, how do you get there? You know, if there's gridlock, like in the LA basin, there's only 5 exits out of that valley for 20 million people. It's gridlock during normal times, trying to get out of the, even on the freeway, let alone in a crisis.
Yeah.
So people have to be prepared to get out in advance. It's one of the reasons why, if they subscribe to my World Affairs Brief, they probably get advance notice. I think the trigger event is going to be the attack on Taiwan. I think when that starts and happens, we could be in World War III within 3 weeks to a month after that starts. Yeah. Now, if you're stuck in the cities and you can't leave, at least you can relocate to the peripheries of the city. That's what I recommend, is strategic relocation. So you're on the outside of the ring of population density. You commute into work. But, you know, you can get out of the city faster if you're on the outskirts of those. Because I know a lot of people can't move this time in their life. And if they think it's tough to prepare for what's happening, you think about preparing when there's no electricity. You're stuck. You're not, preparation ends right then. You're stuck with what you've got. And most of that is people trying to walk out of these major cities amid the chaos of gangs and other people robbing and stealing from people. It's not pretty, but it's not without hope. That's one of the reasons I've written these books, is so that people can prepare. And one of the biggest preparedness factors that I emphasize to people even if you stay in the city, you've got to have a safe room in basement space where that's concealed. Not only to stockpile your supplies as mobs come down the street, you know, breaking into houses, try to steal what they're in. That'll happen. You'll see that happen. After all the food stores are cleaned out, you've got to have a place not only to store your valuables to keep them safe, they can't find even if they break in. You've got to be able to hide people, including yourself. You don't want to be shooting people who are just starving. That just is just overwhelming. You need to get out of the way. So we've done a couple of books, the Secure Home and the High Security Shelter book. That my son's an engineer. We do architectural plans on how to do that yourself so that if you have a basement space, you can build a secure, concealed safe room. And that's a really great strategy.
Yeah, as you were saying that, actually, I was thinking, I mean, we didn't even have to go to the a nuclear strike. I mean, right now, there's the fires in L.A. I mean, look at the gridlock. You do have electricity, so there's that. But imagine what we're seeing right now, the gridlock, people abandoning cars, but without electricity, without internet, without anything. Imagine the chaos that that's mm-hmm. going to create.
Yeah, and you know, if people had safe rooms, even if you got trapped in a fire, a concrete safe room in a basement, actually the house can burn down on the top of you, you can survive. Now, that's not a pretty scenario, but you know, this is really tragic in these fires because, you know, California put on price controls on insurance, and that's what drove most insurance carriers out of California last year. It wasn't just a few weeks before the fire that they decided not to insure these places. They've been pulling out for the last 2 years because of price controls by Governor Newsom. And plus the fact that the increasing amount of fires in the California area due to arson, which is added, which didn't used to happen in California. Now you have a lot of people lighting fires when there's high winds to start these fires, and people don't have insurance. They're losing everything. They're walking away poverty-stricken because their worldly goods cannot be reclaimed and insurance won't cover it.
During all this, people don't want to hear it, obviously, right now while it's happening, but there are some people outside of California that aren't really touched by this directly. They're already talking about what would be considered, I guess, conspiracy theories about what's behind the fires, why this is happening. We saw when it happened in Lahaina, North Carolina. Usually when we see disaster, this comes out. Not calling it a conspiracy theory, but do you see something more beyond just a wildfire with these fires? Because this is, honestly, I've been here in California most of my life. This is one of the biggest ones I've ever seen. Maybe because it's in L.A., celebrities are losing homes this time. It's not just normal people, it's celebrities also. Maybe that puts a little bit more spotlight on it. But do you see something more than just a wildfire with this?
Well, I am an expert in conspiracy fact and theory, and I have talked a lot about the Sonoma County fires, which swept through. And, you know, one of the conspiracy theories was on directed energy weapons, mm-hmm. Both in Lahaina and in California. And one of the evidences they have, or they claim for that, is the fact that the trees were still unburned, and yet the whole neighborhoods were burned down. Well, actually, in a high wind condition, that's very explainable, because the flames stay low to the ground when winds are 60 miles an hour and above, and they don't get up into the treetops. We're seeing this right now in L.A. If you look at the pictures of the devastation of whole subdivisions, the trees still with their foliage at the top levels unburned because the flames stay low to the ground. Now, there are directed energy weapons that the U.S. has been developing, but it's much more difficult to get military people to stay quiet if they use those type of weapons on ground targets and do that than it is to simply pay a few saboteurs to go in and start arson fires like happened in Lahaina and other things. And now there is some conspiracy involved in the fact of government wanting to take over valuable properties and rebuild it according to your 15-minute cities and other type of globalist agendas to control population. And that's happening in Lahaina, where they aren't allowing people to rebuild. They're taking over the land and selling it to big developers, et cetera. I think there is something to those But those are probably conspiracies that take place in the aftermath of what turns out to be power lines coming down under high winds. Now, I think the power company in California has been grossly negligent for not shutting down the power in wide swaths of these areas. There's a video from space of showing three of these fires in California starting simultaneously. Now, I don't think that's arson, because that would be very difficult, miles apart, to trigger three fires simultaneously. And what would be the purpose of doing it simultaneously? I don't see that. But certainly if a high wind gust took down three sets of power lines in different areas at the same time, that could certainly explain that. But that wouldn't happen if the power company shut down the power. Now, a lot of people say, well, they don't want to lose the revenue by shutting the power down to it. Well, look, the power company, PG&E, has lost billions of dollars in payouts for the damage they've done in prior fires, which far exceeds the revenue that they would keep from keeping power on for a few more hours. I've seen pictures from an airplane of the fires in L.A. yesterday that showed that last night that the lights were still on in areas that were burning. Now, that's just unconscionable. Those power should be shut off to stop further fires from spreading.
I've always wondered that. I mean, again, I've lived my entire life in California, and it seems that I've lived in other places in the country, and it's not like this. It's actually more densely forested than here in California, what we have. But they seem to know what they're doing. For whatever reason, it's always California. I can't figure out, hey, we have trees, we have forests, how do we take care of them? And I've always found it strange that when it's cold and people want to use their fireplaces, want to turn on their furnaces, that's when we're told, no, you can't turn it on. And then when we don't need it, that's when we can turn it on. So it's always been backwards to me, and I have never understood that. I'm glad you're kind of explaining why that is.
Well, there is a real decided leftist agenda. Remember, globalists are leftists. They're just a milder form than communists. And the globalists even fund, like Soros has funded BLM and Antifa, to create riots, because the globalists believe in using communists to break down the social order, create conflict, so they can come in and rescue the world with their milder form of socialism. Yeah. But you have an actual Marxist, radical Marxist mayor of Los Angeles, Miss Bass, Karen Bass. She's a member of the Vincent Amos Brigade, the radical pro-Cuban Castro communist organization that trains people, and they do bi-year or biannual tours to Castro's Cuba.
Yeah.
Even Castro's gone now, and she's gone every time. She was in Ghana, which is a far leftist African company.
Well, a lot of people don't know this. She's not just a member. She's actually a leader of that organization.
Yeah, she's a real radical Marxist.
Yeah.
And look who she's picked. You know, she cut off funding for the fire departments. You know, you've got this Governor Newsom and the environmentalists in California restricting future water storage, even during high water years, to save the fish. So you run out of water so that fire hydrants in Pacific Palisades ran dry when they're trying to fight these fires. I mean, this is just stupid. You have three gay women, all with short crop male hairdos, running the LA Fire Department. I mean, this is just, it's the laughing stock of the world, what's going on in LA, and now it's had deadly consequences.
Yeah, I mean, not to make a joke of it, but the DEI has literally become DIE at this point.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and again, I mean, not making a joke of it, but that's what comes out of this thing. I've always said, and it's not because I hate these things and I hate those kinds of people. You know, I've always said, you can act however you want. Just don't start forcing it on
that's
everybody
right.
else. That's the beauty of our country.
That's my feeling too. Yeah, you can be whatever you want. I'm a libertarian, but don't force it on other people.
Yeah, and that's both sides, not just the quote unquote the right side. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Now, as you also being a study of the Constitution, I've had this conversation actually a couple of years ago. But some friends of mine, actually, they were in Hollywood. They were the people in Hollywood. They were filmmakers. But I'm very interested to hear what you think about this. I brought up the question, have we outgrown the Constitution? Meaning progress, or what they call progress, quote unquote, it's progressing so fast that we can't always apply the Constitution to people's, like we were just saying, to their behavior, specifically what society at large considers normal. Can we continue to apply the Constitution, or have we outgrown it? That's what I mean by that. I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, humanity really hasn't changed, and human problems, greed, selfishness, trying to take advantage of other people. The Constitution was meant to establish a strict rule of law to handle that. Now, that's mostly in local jurisdictions, local law, et cetera. But what the Constitution originally did was had enumerated powers, meaning the federal government was limited to what we say it can do and nothing more. And that was one of the first things to go bye-bye, even in the post-constitutional era in 1789, even. You know, trying to buy up Western lands and expand the continents and pay off paper IOUs from the Continental Congress and state debts, et cetera, and they wanted to expand the power of government to do what had to be done. Those types of things are a problem because the Constitution really, I mean, that's why we had the Bill of Rights by the Anti-Federalists put into the Constitution, because they didn't trust the enumerated powers to stay around very long to restrict the federal government. They said, we've got to at least have enumerated powers that defend fundamental rights. Now, unfortunately, they didn't also attach a good definition of what are fundamental rights. The Bill of Rights really are the common law rights left over from the British rule, habeas corpus, which is, you know, demand that you show cause of why you've arrested somebody, you know, freedom of speech, that's being eroded. But, you know, about the only thing that restricts the government anymore is the Bill of Rights, and they're trying to whittle those down pretty fast through the deep state surveillance. Domestic surveillance is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. So there's a lot going on there, but I think actually because humanity has to be safeguarded from what we call the ultimate lure of socialism, which is we promise you equal benefits even though you're not equal in talents or abilities or worth. You know, as everybody's different in this world, we're not all the same, never going to be the same. And the free market allows people to make judgments and choose how much to pay, et cetera. And everything about our government in the East and the West, everything is about equalizing society, which actually penalizes the talented ones because they have to end up paying for all this welfare for people, these promising them equal salaries when you don't have equal worth. And I'm talking about, you know, physical work and skill worth, not, you know, worth as a person, even though there's differences there. But I believe we actually need tighter restrictions on the Constitution to stop socialism outright from redistributing wealth of other people, because that sets society groups against group. It's always a conflict scenario of who's going to get their share of the socialist pie. Whereas in true free markets, everybody's got to, you know, work for what they get, and people are free to grow and retain wealth as fast as they can.
Yeah, that actually is what brought up this question for me is thinking about it. The last few years, since the turn of the century, I would say that from 2000 to now, you're right. The Constitution, it is a little vague. In fact, too vague, you might say, because it's very easy for anyone to turn everything into a right when it's really not. So
yeah,
that's what brought up that question, is have we outgrown the Constitution? But you're right. I agree with what you're saying. Not get rid of it and get a new one, but definitely we have to start defining what exactly the Founding Fathers meant in the Constitution, because it's too easy to take something and, well, it's a right. It's in the Constitution. So
here's my definition, Henry, of a fundamental right.
Mm-hmm.
A fundamental right there's two criteria. One, it has to apply to everybody, not just one or two or minority. Yeah. Everybody has to be able to claim the right simultaneously. And two, it has to be non-conflicting. In other words, you can't set up a right that conflicts with somebody else. You got to have something, a fundamental right is everybody can do it without conflict with other people. And so my definition is a fundamental right, or fundamental rights, are those rights that everyone can claim simultaneously without forcing anyone else to serve their needs. Let me repeat that. A fundamental right is the right that everybody can claim simultaneously without forcing anyone to serve their needs. So you can't have a fundamental right to free education. You got to force somebody to pay for the schools and pay the salary.
Right.
You can't have a fundamental right for free medical care. Force somebody to pay for the hospitals, the doctors, and all the things that go along with it. But everybody can claim simultaneously the right to defend themselves. Everybody can claim the right to property gained through voluntary means. Everybody can claim the right, you see, to clean air and other things and to stop people from polluting. So a good definition of fundamental rights stops people from, you know, judges from claiming false rights, the right to free medical care, the right to abortion, the right to others that involve the violation of someone else's right and life and property.
Yeah. Now let me start wrapping up like this. I'm not asking you for a psychic prediction because you're not a psychic, I'm not a psychic, so we don't do that here on this show. But what do you think these next 4 years are going to look like for us?
Well, today's World Affairs Brief, which just came out, and by the way, your listeners can get a free copy of it by going to worldaffairsbrief.com and clicking on Request a Sample on the left-hand side. But I talked about how Biden and the judges are setting it up so that, you know, they're trying to hogtie Trump and restrict him from making any changes. They're tying up and banning oil, tying up all of the offshore areas, and there's a permanent ban against oil and things. They're trying to ban gas appliances. They're trying to ban, you know, anything but expensive condensing gas furnaces. Double the price. These types. They're pardoning, and Biden's going to try to do that today. In fact, pardoning Fauci and Liz Cheney and Hillary Clinton, so they can never be prosecuted by Trump. So, in light of a proper prosecution, even though Trump is going to try to do some good things, I think he's going to be stymied by the courts. I think they're going to have a full court press against Donald Trump to try to tie him up in court and make illegal what he tries to do. Because the judges, a great many of the judges are deep state. They're tied to that, and they're going to make it tough on them. I think Trump will try to overturn most of these executive orders by Biden. But like Biden just opened up Social Security to the government and state employees, we have lavish pension systems. It's going to help bankrupt Social Security earlier. But Trump and the Republicans have never had the guts to be able to cut benefits because it's highly unpopular and you get unelected if you try to cut benefits. That's the problem of corrupting your voters with socialism. That ought to be illegal in a constitution to ever grant benefits to people through government taxation, because it allows them to suborn and bribe voters, basically, to vote for them. That's what gives socialists a real advantage in election, at least in Democratic states. But I think the big thing that you got to watch for is this coming war that nobody's warning about.
Yeah.
I think that Russia can't nuke the West until China's ready. China, Xi Jinping says, we'll be a first-class military by 2027. And that doesn't mean the war is going to start then, but even U.S. intelligence, and I've got many military contacts, are telling their people that China thinks they'll be ready to take Taiwan in 2027. So what we may face in this world of continual turmoil and political turmoil, it's political gridlock. I don't think much is going to change because of the gridlock in the Congress, but people are going to be blindsided by this war coming up. And I'll tell you, when this war starts, it's going to be like night and day. One day you're fine, and the next day the lights go out and nukes start to fall at military bases. There is no communication for a while with government, and panic starts. And I'm not sure we recover fully from this war, because if you got a year without the grid and you've got constant pillaging, how do you get back to normal and forgive people when there's rape, robbery, and murder and chaos and people moving out of the cities all over the country? How do you recover? I'll tell you this, we'll never have an AI robotic society like the World Economic Forum is claiming. You know, green energy is destroying the grid. They're shutting down coal and other power. And I'll tell you, solar and wind is not going to hack it. And we don't, you know, shutting down nuclear power plants and other things like Germany has done. And now they're on electric rationing. They don't even allow people to turn on their electric heaters to make up for the lack of natural gas in Germany. This is going to be bad. So how do you have an AI robotic society without a constant flow of electricity and without a constant flow of moral people to have peace in the world? That's the big thing that I'm predicting, is that when this war comes, that's the thing to watch for. You'd better be prepared for that. And you may say it's futile to prepare, but I'll tell you, you'll wish it wasn't futile, and you wish you'd done something.
Yeah.
When you're desperately looking for a way out of the LA basement when this starts.
Exactly. I mean, I'll use, again, the old saying, it's better to have a gun and not need it than to need it and not have it.
So, you can get out of the way if you don't want to use the gun on people.
Yeah. For 2025, do you have any books on the way, Joel?
Well, I'm no new books. My basic efforts go into that World Affairs brief every week. I'm doing some updates, you know, over time on my books, you know, keeping them current, et cetera. But doing a lot of interviews and speaking engagements too.
Okay. Then I have everything linked up on the show description for all of you listening. You can get the books, you can sign up for the World Affairs Brief newsletter on there. JoelScousen.com is what it is, linked up on the show description. Easy for all of you to just click on Joel's name. It'll take you there. Thank you so much for coming on today, Joel. Thanks for all the information. And everybody else, I'll be right back to wrap everything up.
A good interview. Thank you very much, Henry.
Paranormal is everywhere. Why, it's even in these commercials you're about to hear. Paranormal Perception will be right back.
At Eerie Expeditions magazine, we believe in the magic that lies beyond the ordinary, the mysteries that beckon from the shadows, and the stories whispered by the unseen. Our magazine is dedicated to exploring the intriguing and often spine-chilling world of paranormal travel. Whether you're a seasoned paranormal investigator or a curious traveler with a penchant for the supernatural, we have something to spark your curiosity and ignite your adventurous spirit. Our mission is to uncover the hidden corners of the world where the paranormal comes to life. We aim to provide our readers with immersive and authentic experiences, from haunted hotels and ghost towns to mystical landscapes and ancient sites steeped in legend. Through captivating storytelling, detailed guides, and exclusive interviews, we bring the eerie and extraordinary to your fingertips. Visit eerieexpeditionsmagazine.com to start your subscription today.
Ready for a new perception? A paranormal perception? Good, because the show is back now.
There's one more thing that I want to share with you all before I wrap up. For the rest of this year, there will only be one paranormal perception episode per month. So, once a month show. The shows, though, they're going to be 2 hours, give or take. Might be an hour, might be an hour and a half. But definitely closer to 2 hours. It'll depend on what I'm talking about or who I'm talking to. But just one episode per month from now until the end of the year. There's another reason why just a monthly show now. But that is for the second hour.
Now you have something new to think about. Remember, Henry doesn't give you concrete answers about paranormal topics. Just a new perception of the paranormal. Ready for more? Good, because there's more for you right now, right here, on Paranormal Perception, the final season.
A few minutes ago, you heard me ask Joe Skousen about conspiracies already swirling around these LA wildfires. They're mainly from people who don't live here, or they're not affected in any way by these fires. So that's why they have time to come up with these conspiracies. But once the smoke clears, literally in this case, they will pop up here in California from Californians. In fact, celebrities, they're already turning their anger to the leaders who they contribute a lot of money to get elected and get behind their campaigns no matter what. As I mentioned to Joel, I've lived in California my whole life. As of earlier this week, that's well over 50 years at this point. I do not remember any wildfires of this magnitude in my childhood at all. I remember fires, but nothing like this. Those started in the late 90s, and they've become a regular thing for all of this century. And like I said, I don't get how we're just fine about two decades, and suddenly we have a fire season every year now. Now, everybody who can, they're helping and will continue to help California in the coming days and months. I'm sure of that. But like an alcoholic or a gambling addict, anyone that has a problem, really, you got to do some soul searching as well, California. With the idol worshiping that goes on with celebrities over here, maybe them speaking up about failed leadership is finally going to convince the population here to vote them out. Like celebrities, Gavin Newsom, the governor, he's a practiced actor when answering questions. You guys have probably seen him on the news. But what about when it's unplanned and unrehearsed? Well, I have a clip that I want to play for you. This is a mother. I don't know her name. She's not identified. But I saw this on social media, on TikTok, Instagram. It's been making the rounds on social media the last couple of days. But I found this, so I took the sound. I'm going to play this for you. It's a mother who ran up to the governor a couple of days ago as he was touring the devastation left behind from the initial wildfires. This was after reports started coming in about the hydrants not having enough water. This woman, again, don't know her name, but her daughter's school burned to the ground because of that. So she saw Gavin Newsom getting into his car, and there's video. I'm sure some of you have seen it, what you're about to hear. But if not, just look it up on TikTok, on Instagram, anywhere on social media. I'm sure it's out there. This is the woman coming up to the governor and asking him obvious questions. Basically, what the hell happened? Again, unscripted, unrehearsed. This is what the governor's answer was.
That was my daughter's school, Governor. Please tell me what you're going to do. I'm not going to hurt him. I promise.
I'm literally talking to the president right now to specifically answer the question of what we can do for you and your daughter.
Can I hear it? Can I hear your call? Because I don't believe it.
I'm sorry. There's literally, I've tried five times. That's why I'm walking around to make the
call. Why is the president not taking your call?
Because it's not going through. So
why?
I have to get cell service.
So let's get it. Let's get it. I want to be here when you call the president.
I appreciate it. I'm doing that right now. And it's to immediately get reimbursements, individual assistance, and to help you. I'm devastated. I'm so sorry, especially for your daughter. I have four kids losing
everyone
the school.
Everyone who went to school there, they lost their homes. They lost two homes because they were living in one and building another. Governor, please tell me, what are you going to do with the president right now?
We're getting the resources to help rebuild.
Why was there no water in the hydrants, Governor?
That's all, literally.
Is it going to be different next time?
It has to be. Has to be, of course.
What are you going to do?
To fill the hydrants.
I would fill them up personally, you know that.
I would fill up the hydrants myself. I understand.
But would you do that?
I would do whatever I can.
But you're not! Do you know there's water dripping over there, Governor? There's water coming out there. You can use it.
I appreciate it.
No, honestly, it doesn't surprise me. I've seen incompetence in governor after governor, so I'm not surprised to hear that. But how about the mayor of L.A.? Well, there were reports on social media that she was missing. At first, you would think, oh no, in the fires? No, she just wasn't here in L.A. Well, she's not missing. She was in Ghana, West Africa, at the inauguration of their new president. She was confronted at the airport as she arrived in Ghana earlier this week and asked why wasn't she flying back to L.A. or at least addressing the fires. Her answer? That. Silence. She didn't even look at the reporters who were asking the questions. She's back in L.A. now, and after, I guess, she had time to rehearse or be told or write up a script to address all of this. She did do a public appearance finally here in LA. And this is what she had to say about the wildfires.
Let me just say, first and foremost, my number one focus, and I think the focus of all of us here with one voice, is that we have to protect lives, we have to save lives, and we have to save homes. Rest assured that when that
did not
rest
happen.
Assured, let me finish. Rest assured, when that is done, when we are safe, when lives have been saved and homes have been saved, we will absolutely do an evaluation to look at what worked, what didn't work, and to correct or to hold accountable any body, department, individual, etc. But my focus right now is on the lives and on the homes. You know, I think if you go back and look at the reductions that were made, there were no reductions that were made that would have impacted the situation that we were dealing with over the last couple of days. And then there was a little bit, of confusion because money was allocated to be distributed later on, which was actually going to support salaries and other parts of the fire department that were distributed a little later. So I think it's most important to understand that we were in tough budgetary times. Everybody knew that. But that the impact of our budget really did not impact what we've been going through over the last few days. Again, back to the unprecedented windstorm, wind at such ferocity that we haven't seen in years, is the context in which we were dealing with it. Thank you.
Now, if you've lived here in California as long as I have, or longer, you know, or you should know at least, that the last reservoir, water reservoir, built in California was in 1978. There were about 19 million, almost 20 million people in California back then. That was the population. In, at least at the end of 2024, a couple of weeks into 2025, there are 39 million people here in California. Even with so many leaving since 2020 to now, California citizens love to smugly brag about how the population actually increased in 2024. Well, did the number of reservoirs also grow to match the population? I'll let you take a guess on that one. The point is, when I say quote-unquote conspiracies, I don't mean who shot JFK, although that was admitted 2 years ago. Oh, you didn't know? Look that up. Or some outlandish conspiratorial claims. Something that is definitely a clown show. You're not going to hear me talk about that here on this show. This ain't Alex Jones. When I mean conspiracies that are right in front of you. And unfortunately for us in California, we're living through them as I record this. So if you get mad when I say things like DEI and other things that aren't real, on this show, at least, when you hear something like that and you're saying, ah, it's not even real, what's he talking about? Well, right now, open your window, you can see and you can smell the truth behind it. That's what you're going to hear on this show moving forward. I just wanted to point that out. That and a couple of new things you're also going to hear. I'll tell you about those in a moment.
Paranormal perception will continue in a moment.
At Eerie Expeditions Magazine, we believe in the magic that lies beyond the ordinary, the mysteries that beckon from the shadows, and the stories whispered by the unseen. Our magazine is dedicated to exploring the intriguing and often spine-chilling world of paranormal travel. Whether you're a seasoned paranormal investigator or a curious traveler with a penchant for the supernatural, we have something to spark your curiosity and ignite your adventurous spirit. Our mission is to uncover the hidden corners of the world where the paranormal comes to life. We aim to provide our readers with immersive and authentic experiences, from haunted hotels and ghost towns to mystical landscapes and ancient sites steeped in legend. Through captivating storytelling, detailed guides, and exclusive interviews, we bring the eerie and extraordinary to your fingertips. Visit eerieexpeditionsmagazine.com to start your subscription today. To be together.
Now back to paranormal perception. Pay attention. This is why it's not the same old paranormal.
Another reason why this is now a monthly show rather than weekly is because there's a new spinoff that you're also going to be able to listen to once a month. For years, I'd been wanting to do a Women in the Paranormal episode or a weekly feature featuring women in the paranormal and their contributions to the paranormal. Now, when I started doing OC Paracons, that was actually one of the first panels I thought of including. Now, every time I thought I had the perfect panelist, the perfect women to represent women in the paranormal, they always disappeared. Not like a ghost, but I'm just saying they either retired or they decided, you know what, I don't want to do paranormal anymore. Some did, as the kids say, they did ghost. They just left, no warning, no nothing. So that didn't really happen until last year. Finally, it all came together. And I was finally able to include the Women in the Paranormal panel at OC Paracon. It was an enjoyable panel, but many of the topics that I did want to bring up weren't brought up. I wasn't the moderator, so I really had no control over that. And so I started planning a follow-up panel for the next OC Paracon. However, leading up to Halloween, I thought even better than a panel at OC Paracon would be a Paranormal Perception spinoff show that would feature Women in the Paranormal. So, got in touch with somebody that I had met right before OC Paracon. In fact, she was at OC Paracon. And I asked her to be the host for this new show. She said, yes, I'll do it. And here she is, Amanda Ashley. Hi, Amanda. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Henry. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, well, now I really have you back. Now you are part of the Paranormal Perception on-air family now with this new show. So, well, first of all, before we do anything, we talk about anything, before you record an actual show here in front of everybody, let me first say to you, thank you for agreeing to be the host of this show. I know it probably wasn't on your 2025 bingo card, but here we are. So thanks for agreeing to do it.
Yes, no, thank you. This 2025, nothing that's happening was on my bingo card. So this plays right into it. And, you know, I'm really excited.
Yeah, that's the understatement of the year. And again, we're just 2 weeks in and already. But seems obvious, but what will the monthly episodes, what will the Women in the Paranormal episodes, what are they going to sound like?
Well, like most, you know, male-dominated fields, I feel sometimes the women's voices go a little bit unheard, or they're often portrayed in media as like a sidekick, or, you know, just there for kind of the feels of a show or a topic or something. But through the women that I've met in the paranormal community, they are the main characters, you know, these are smart, powerful, intelligent, just awesome women. And it just feels like having a space for them to tell their stories, you know, the ups and downs and everything that comes along with being in the paranormal field. I just feel like it's a great idea to have a little space for them to share their stories.
Yeah, that's the part actually that I do want to hear more. That's what I was talking about when I said a lot of the topics that I wanted to bring up weren't brought up. That was when you and I talked about this, that was one of the parts that weren't brought up is, yes, we know what they do and how that's why they're on the panel. But what was the struggle? What to be seen, to be taken seriously, like you said, in a very male dominated field like radio is, and most broadcasting, most fields really are very male dominated, as everybody knows. But yeah, that's the part of their stories that I wanted to hear. We know what they do; it's great, but we wanted to know what are the struggles, what did it take to get out. So I'm glad you're going to bring that up. Now, might be too early, but can you tease some of the women that we might hear on these on these new shows?
It is a little early. But like your ladies that you had on the panel, you know, I'd like to have an array of people on, you know, authors like Nicole Strickland and, ladies who are maybe tour guides and mediums and through all different types, maybe even fields that you wouldn't normally think of related to the paranormal. I think there's a big enough, you know, stage to have a lot of different types of women on. And in the panel, I think you guys did such a great job in putting them up and letting them have their space to speak. But sometimes when you're at a Paracon, there's only so much time for them to, you know, say their little piece. So It'll be cool to have, you know, like a larger chunk of information, and hopefully also inspiration. That's kind of a thing that's been a big thing for me in 2025. I've been thinking, like, what stories are inspiring? You know, what are we consuming, and how can we be more inspirational? How can we bring, you know, information in a positive way to everybody?
Yeah, I like that for sure. Now, we're not going to give a date as to when. It will be sometime this month, and then after that, it'll be once a month. It'll be a monthly episode, just like Paranormal Perception is. So you'll really get two episodes, a regular Paranormal Perception episode, and then also whoever Amanda features on the Women in the Paranormal episode for the month. So two different episodes, one the paranormal one, the other one, the Women in the Paranormal. But while we wait for the debut of that new show, where can listeners follow you in the meantime?
They can follow me on Instagram at The Spooky Storyteller. And as I've said on your show before, I hope to have more content coming up in the new year as soon as, you know, this new year kind of calms down and we get back to normal life after the holidays and after the craziness, then, you know, I hope to connect with more people on there.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that's the case with everybody over here. Maybe you guys have noticed on the news, there's some things happening over here in Southern California that are a little bit more important than uploading, you know, stories to social media or anything else. It's right. Literally life and death things happening over here. So it's not like we're being lazy or anything. There's literally life and death things going on. People are losing their lives, unfortunately. Animals are so they're losing their entire properties. Their entire lives are going up in smoke, literally. So because of that, you know, the last thing I think people are thinking about is updating their social media or their accounts. So cut us a break over here, people. There's some things going on.
That's yeah, absolutely. It's been a hard time for everybody here in California. So, you know, hopefully things get better soon.
Yes. So. That is an intro to something new coming from Paranormal Perception. And one more final thing, I'll tell you about that in about 30 seconds. So nobody go anywhere.
At Eerie Expeditions Magazine, we believe in the magic that lies beyond the ordinary, the mysteries that beckon from the shadows, and the stories whispered by the unseen. Our magazine is dedicated to exploring the intriguing and often spine-chilling world of paranormal travel. Whether you're a seasoned paranormal investigator or a curious traveler with a penchant for the supernatural, we have something to spark your curiosity and ignite your adventurous spirit. Our mission is to uncover the hidden corners of the world where the paranormal comes to life. We aim to provide our readers with immersive and authentic experiences, from haunted hotels and ghost towns to mystical landscapes and ancient sites steeped in legend. Through captivating storytelling, detailed guides, and exclusive interviews, we bring the eerie and extraordinary to your fingertips. Visit eerieexpeditionsmagazine.com to start your subscription today.
Now back to Paranormal Perception. Here's Henry San Miguel.
One final fun thing for 2025. How about a free subscription to a paranormal magazine? Now, what caught your attention? Seriously, free or paranormal? Both? Well, good. It's a free year-long subscription to Eerie Expeditions Magazine. You just heard the commercial. Thanks to my friend C.L. Thomas, who puts this together. She is going to give you once a month, as, you know, when you hear Paranormal Perception episodes, we're going to give, I guess that totals 12 free year-long subscriptions to Eerie Expeditions magazines. However, it is free, but you do have to do a little bit of work on your part. But it's fun work, something that you would be doing anyway. And that's this. This is how you can get a free subscription. Listen to the episodes every month. As you're listening, I haven't decided what yet, but you're going to hear a sound effect. You'll know. It'll be obvious when you hear it. When you hear that, write down whatever word is being said when you hear that sound effect. That is going to be the Eerie Expeditions word of the month. Once you figure out what it is, write it down somewhere, memorize it, then go to eerieexpeditionsmagazine.com. Email it there in the subject, put free year-long subscription, and tell us what the word is. We're going to pick, randomly, pick whoever gets it right. We're going to pick one of you, and you will be the winner for that month of a year-long subscription to Eerie Expeditions Magazine. That's all you got to do. A little bit of work, but it's fun work. Like I said, something you would be doing anyway. Listening to the Paranormal Perception episode. When you hear the sound effect, that's the word of the month. Write it down. Send it to contact at eerieexpeditionsmagazine.com, and we'll randomly pick one winner each month for the rest of the year. And those winners will get a free year-long subscription to Eerie Expeditions Magazine. Fun, huh? And it's free. You get it all year. And it's a paranormal magazine. What more could you want? So there it is. Again, reminder, I won't be back next week. This is now going to be a monthly episode, once a month. But you also heard a new spinoff, Paranormal Perception Presents Women in the Paranormal. That'll begin soon. Not sure who the first guest... Well, I have an idea who the first guest is going to be, but haven't confirmed yet. But you will hear those pretty soon. And we are back, the final season. I will talk to all of you next month.
Now you have a new perception of the paranormal, or at least something new to think about. While you wait for the next show, you can visit the show online at paranormalperception.show. Thank you for listening, and join us next time for an all-new Paranormal Perception, the final season.
Paranormal Perception was produced, edited, and distributed by 22 Creations Multimedia, LLC.